were traveling with Jesus, and he turned and said to them, "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even life itself, cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry the cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not first sit down and estimate the cost, to see whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it will begin to ridicule him, saying, 'This fellow began to build and was not able to finish.' For what king, going out to wage war against another king, will not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to oppose the one who comes against him with 20,000? If he cannot, then, while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for terms of truce. So therefore, none of you can become my disciple if you do not give up all your possessions. Salt is good, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is fit neither for the soil nor for the manure heap. They throw it away. Let anyone with ears to hear listen. Holy wisdom, holy word. Thanks be to God."
Good morning, beloved. You're doing great with hymn editing typos, and you're still here after that good morning reading. Thank you, Dan, for bringing us the word. What is going on here? I can't stop thinking about Rally Day. Has anyone come up in a church where this Sunday, starting fall, was known as Rally Day? Maybe some of you had experience, maybe not. Many of the churches I was blessed to serve had sort of this like big fall kickoff, Rally Day. And so I've, you know, programs roll out. I suspect it's often sort of a marketing thing to get the summer disappeared back. So I have been kind of cracking up for the last little stretch, thinking, welcome back, summer lightweights. Here, you cannot be a disciple. No one can be a disciple unless all of these lists that Dan just read to us. We have to hate our family. We have to give up everything. What is going on here? I hope that at churches, our brethren all over the country who may be celebrating Rally Day, that they're not going to water this down and turn this really intense scripture into something that it's not. We're certainly not this morning going to turn this into a comfortable, palatable message that we can walk out with a little more readily. But we are going to dig into what on earth is going on here. And it's our first clue actually has very much to do with the earth. Did you hear that last part about the manure and the salt? So what happens when you sprinkle salt? An ancient, you know, fertilization practice was to put salt on the manure pile to essentially extend the life of the fertilizer and to make it preserve so when it goes into the soil, it's still full of all that good nutrient. And here we're seeing this sort of story. Jesus is saying, you know what, if your salt has lost its saltiness, and you sprinkle it on the pile, not only is it not going to build the soil, but in fact, it might even putrefy it and toxify it. And so here we are, the second part of chapter 14 in Luke, And remember last week, we were thinking about what makes for the soil of discipleship. We're at the dinner party, and Jesus is telling the grand hosts not to invite the likely friends who will bounce the invitation right back, but who needs to be at this table. And we were especially thinking about that message going to the table owners, but the message for those so often left out is not that you need to head out to the streets, but maybe you need to take front and center stage. So the soil of discipleship, what is it that is required for us to make the ground where God's realm can bloom? I had some occasion to turn over manure on my time away from you. I had much more time shoveling horse poop than I ever would have imagined. There's a urban horse farm right next to our house, and I have befriended them, and we've had a neat routine develop where on Sunday mornings here I say too much with all of you, and then on Mondays I get to go and shovel out the horse pads. And so one of the things handling a lot of horse manure these days, I've certainly been thinking about that power of the soil and the discipleship, but also just that richness. What gives us good building blocks in our gardens? Jesus gives us a pause here. This sort of weeding out who's salty and who's got it and who's got the fire sounds a little different when he's saying, in fact, some of you, if you're, you know, posers, this is actually going to bring down the movement, and we don't need that. That's going to ruin the soil. That is quite a switch from a lot of the passages we immerse in that are more of come one, come all, come as you are. So this should give us a pause. What is going on here? Jesus seems to be taking up some winnowing at this stage. So we leave the dinner party, and one of the things that is our clue is he says, he looks back, and this is a big crowd behind him. So it's not a case of Jesus inspiring that brave, lonely voice to come up the altar, come forward. Jesus is saying, let's actually take a second here. Do any of you know where we are going? We are facing down martyrdom when we get to Jerusalem, and he uses this journey motif almost as a way to begin to winnow that crowd, to sift it out. Who here is preparing to leave everything behind? Who wants to make the kind of all-consuming commitment that I have to this mission? And he's not trying to lure in, you know, an unsuspecting convert. He seems to be not so concerned with those who have not fully considered the commitments. And he's giving this warning in advance that this is not going to be easy. So we'll hold that, and that sense of looking for disciples who might be able to, not fully knowing the outcome, but weigh a sense of the cost of discipleship. And we're thinking about this today with our theme that we are all living these lives that we never could have predicted. And I've been just immersed in some beautiful history and treasures from my family of story. While I was gone, I did some study with relatives, and particularly got some time to talk through some old sordid tales with my father. And one of them, it was sort of a loaded occurrence that brought us to this task, but my dad and I have been doing a lot of reckoning around some of his choices, where he met his soulmate, and the fabric of our family changed dramatically, and we've had a lot to talk about this summer. But one of the things, you know, you've reached sort of some peace with things when you can joke about things. And I said, Dad, well, at least there aren't a lot of great examples in our family, are there? There's the story of Uncle Bill, and we just got to begin to sort of marvel that in all of our richness of family, not many of us ever have a great map when divorce comes on the screen. But this, I want to share with you a story that is not the best lore from my family, but one that is shared in sacred trust about my granny's beloved brother. She had two brothers, and they grew up in Congregational UCC mission in India, but when they came back to the States, wonderful little piece of trivia here, the church that will join us this evening, Wellington Avenue, UCC in Chicago, where I have roots as well as Yuki, my great uncle pastored there for a time, William Clark, Bill Clark, and my granny and my grandfather had to confront a tragedy not too far into their marriage. So great uncle Bill died, and my grandpa, as a UCC minister, was able to preside at the memorial as they remembered him. So why this story amidst lives we can't predict? Well, one evening, my grandpa in his study got a call, and clear as day was Uncle Bill's voice saying, Ross, I'm calling you for help. I'm in Canada. And it turns out, long story short, that Uncle Bill was so burdened with his life, his wife, his children, his ministry, he had staged his own death and had been in Canada with a soulmate starting a new life. And he had been burdened with his conscience and reached out to my grandfather and began a long journey of return and healing and amends. And yet, I have been holding what that was for my grandparents, because Granny and Grandpa had the most beautiful model of love that I've witnessed. My grandpa could always have that sparkle where he just felt like somehow he had won the lottery, that he was the luckiest man on earth to be with Mary Lawrence Clark Cannon, and he always held that. And so to imagine his struggle to keep a confidence and remain in his call, with holding that pastoral confidence while he lived day to day with Granny. The cost and the joys of discipleship is our theme here. But one of the things that we can never predict is how the course will unfold. But what we can do when we stand up together, and the promises that we will hear together and will lift here together in Yuki's hour. You know, one of those promises that comes for those of us who take the call to serve is, will you honor all confidences shared with you? And so many of us have been led to say, I will, with God's grace. And so the lives that we can never predict. In Jesus' day, he was being pushed and pushed toward what was going to be this confrontation in Jerusalem, and he was trying to make sure that those who were taking up this march were ready to risk. So here, when we've traveled with him and we've been inspired by Jesus' ethic of love, what does this mean that he's trying to shake people by what seems like this exaggerated use of hate? And really, what it is, the verb means to let go and to release. So many of the sacred human relationships or commitments that we hold, that may take a form that we can never predict. Discipleship requires leaving home and family, and in those days, that traveling with minimal provisions from village to village in order to proclaim the gospel. And one of the things that now we can chuckle a bit with the early church. Guess what later in Corinth was their next challenge? After all these itinerant band members were leaving town, next thing they knew, early churches setting up in Corinth, their challenge was being faced by pagan spouses divorcing their believing partners. And many who said, that's great for them, but that's not gonna cover the home front. These ways that Jesus is trying to signal and warn. Did you hear that first example? He says, if you're going into a battle that's unbalanced, are you just going to head on into it? Or are you going to actually send an emissary ahead, try to work out the truce? You're not going to bring your people into that. Take stock of what the costs are going to be. And a second example he gives to try to shake people out of it. But he ends with asking all those in that huge crowd and fast forwarding to us, asking us, do you have eyes to hear? Here is the great reversal we've been getting all through the Gospel of Luke. The conditions of discipleship are not going to be comfortable and easy, as simple. And here we are, we bring our human condition where, of course, we gravitate toward that which is a little softer, smoother, simpler, easier. Of course, that's what we want. But what we seem to be hearing from Jesus is that this might require more than we can ever imagine. So one of the ways he says sacrifice may come to those who follow, this, the language of bearing the cross that has been so corrupted by overuse from so many angles, part of what seems like this is not about being asked to bear chronic illness or a painful physical condition. This is not about putting up with a trying family relationship. This is about what we voluntarily do to commit and take that step and decide to move in and begin to risk on a whole new level. So one of the things that Jesus seems to be inviting us this day, can we lean into these promises, our covenants, our commitments in life? Maybe where we serve, where we minister, to marry, to parent, to study, to join an itinerant band of followers, to be held as baptized as part of this particular time and place amidst the powerful and mighty tradition to bounce against that deep ancestry we have in our tradition, to claim a community of discipleship in which together we can take some new risks and turn toward a world full of more abundant life and generosity and justice. So there should be a massive dissonance for us when we think about the cost and what we're being called into, that this isn't a simple path through middle-class living that we're sold to set our stars upon. There will be a clash, and there will be tremors waking us in the night. There will be those ways where what Jesus is asking us to consider trying clashes with all that we have and know. But this sharing of resources is our baseline expectation. So when Jesus turned to that huge crowd and was trying to shake loose who's really coming forward, I doubt that he had a campaign manager, a staff member who was just impressed with the numbers, tweeting it out, boasting. It seems more that Jesus was really warning folks, this is not going to be a simple journey, that this may require a change in how you spend your precious time, how we spend our precious resources, how we accompany one another. So today, for all of us, amidst the things that are shifting for each of us, changes in vocation, changes in finances, changes in our advocacy and our efforts, we are being asked to band together and find a place here where we can experiment some more, we can risk some more, we can try more, and we will have both the cost and the joys of discipleship. We might even want to say that we are ready to rally. Let us catch courage from each other as we take first steps bit by bit, and I invite us to our hymn of reflection.